So today's the sort of scientific background talk about digital and analog, because there's some basic terminology and some basic facts that you need to understand in order to get a sense for what you can and can't do with digitized music and digitized images. So that's really what we're talking about today. Okay, and the first thing you got to know is that light and music, light and sound are both wave phenomena. So there is a very poorly digitized sine curve. Sorry for the. Imagine this as being a nice smooth analog sine curve. I should sort of get a better one than that, rather than a nice jaggy one that shows that it's a result of a digital thing. So this is a sine curve anyway. It's the graph of y equals sine x. And never mind what. We're not going to do any trigonometry here. But there are some basic facts about this curve, which lie behind a lot of the stuff that's important about digitization of images and sounds. So the first thing is that there are properties that these sine curves have. There are kind of dimensions in which they can be measured. So one is just the amplitude. Okay? If you had y equals sine x, right, it's got a maximum of plus one and a minimum of minus one. But if you have y equals 2 sine x, it goes from plus 2 to minus 2. Y equals 3 sine x, it goes from plus 3 to minus 3. The amount of up and down in the sine curve is called the amplitude. There are three parameters. Amplitude is the first one. That's the easiest one to understand. Okay. Then there's the frequency. Okay. This is a curve that repeats itself, right? Just keeps going up and down. So the length of a complete cycle, one up and one down, and then a return to zero, that spatial distance is the period. So the period, okay, now having said it's spatial, I'm immediately going to switch over and talk about time, because rather than laying them out physically running across the page, we're now going to imagine that this dimension across the bottom is not, a spatial dimension, but a dimension in time. So the wave is shooting past, and we imagine now the wave is shooting past us in time. The time period between the first return to zero and the return to zero from below here, let's just take the solid curve. Right? It starts off at zero, goes to one, goes all the way back to minus one, and then ends up here, where that point repeats itself. So that's the period. That's a certain number of seconds. So you measure the period in seconds per cycle. The frequency is the reciprocal of that. It's the number of cycles per second. And these are just inverses of one another. So if you had a curve that had a sine curve that was 2 seconds per cycle, right, then it would have a frequency of a half a cycle per second. Right? Frequency is one over the period. Period is one over the frequency. So the period is the time duration of one cycle in a wave that's occurring over time. The wavelength is the spatial length of one cycle. Now I'm switching back into the spatial dimension, which depends on how fast the wave is moving. Right? So for waves that are traveling at a fixed speed, the period and the wavelength are proportional. The period is the time measure and the wavelength is the spatial measure. And if the waves are constant, we're just talking about different frequencies, okay, the period and the wavelength are proportional to each other. So light travels at the speed of light, which is denoted by little c, 186,000 miles per second or something like that. And the wavelength is that number times the period. And we'll see what some actual light frequencies and light periods and like white light wavelengths are. So we got amplitude, period, frequency, and wavelength. We got these four things which are related in various ways. Wavelength times the frequency is the speed. So you can remember this just by, you know, this is the sort of thing that if you get confused about it, make sure the units work out right. Right? The wavelength is a distance, like, so that's something in meters. Frequency is so many cycles per second, so that's really a pure number per second. And if you multiply by meters times something per second, you get something in meters per second, which is a speed. So if the speed is fixed, then the wavelength and the frequency are inverse to each other. So if the thing on the right-hand side is constant, like the speed of light, for example, as the wavelength increases, the frequency has to decrease, and vice versa. So for speed of light in a vacuum, same thing, speed of sound in air, which is constant, more or less, independent of the frequency. And the measure of frequency, which I said was cycles per second, is known as a hertz. One hertz is one cycle per second, named after the gentleman who did the basic research on the wave nature of sound. All right, so, you know, electric currents are also periodic phenomena, at least the kind that we use in our outlets. It's 60 hertz or 60 cycles per second. Take sound, you know, the note above, the A above middle C is 440 hertz. And the audible telephone frequencies, okay, an old-fashioned wired plain old telephone system coming through the telephone wiring in your house was engineered to handle frequencies from 400 to 3400 hertz. That was a fateful decision taken by the original telephone engineers, and all of the wiring that's been installed in houses over the years, and many of the switches, many of which have since been replaced, but some of the basic telephone infrastructure, was all premised on the fact that the sounds that the analog, old-fashioned analog telephone system needed to carry were in this range, 400 at the low end, 3400 hertz at the high end. Or sometimes these are, a kilohertz is, of course, 1,000 hertz, so this is 0.4 kilohertz up to 3.4 kilohertz. All right? So far, so good? All right. Visible light, which is electromagnetic waves, at least in one of the interpretations of what it is 10 to the 14th hertz, extremely high frequency, and in the range from 4 times 10 to the 14th to 7.5 times 10 to the 14th. Off the low end, it's invisible. Off the high end, it's also invisible. We'll look at the light spectrum in just a second. All right, so you'll see these hertz things all over the place. Okay, so we did amplitude, period, wavelength, and frequency. Those are the four we've done so far. So the last one to mention is phase. And phase is just taking the same wave and shifting it forward or backwards in time or in space, depending on how you want to look at it, by a fraction of a wavelength. If you move the whole wave a full wavelength, then it winds up exactly on top of itself again, right? So if you move it by a half a wavelength, you take this as the original wave, right? This is the sine. This is actually is y equals sine x. If you move it by half a wavelength, you get something that is actually the mirror image of it. And this one is by a quarter, shifted by a quarter of a wavelength, and so on. And it's, you know, mathematically, if the first one is sine x, the next one is sine of x plus something, and the next one is sine of x plus something else happens to be pi and pi over 2 and so on, but we don't worry about that. All right, shifting the x back and forth, the left and right, changes the phase. Okay, the thing what makes these various things important is that you create more complicated waves by adding together simpler waves. So let's take y equals sine x, which is the curve with the long wavelength, and a sine curve with a wavelength that's 1/10 as long. So this is sine 10 times x. So this has 10 oscillations in the same time that the sine x curve just has one oscillation, and an amplitude that's 20% of what the other sine wave is. So the second one is 0.2 times sine of 10 times x. And you can add these together, and you get another kind of wave, right? It's just, if you think of it, you can just think of it as sort of modifying this one. You basically, the sine x curve is mostly the dominant force in this sum, and by just adding this value to this value, this one pulls this one down a little bit at this point, so you get here, and the next time this one goes down, it pulls it down up here a little bit, and that's this point, and so on and so forth. At the point where they cross, they kind of cancel each other out, so it oscillates around zero a couple of times, and then it drops down, and it's mostly negative. All right? You just add sine curves together. This is just the sum of these two things. Just replace that sine x by a plus. There it is. Sine x plus 0.2 times sine of 10 times x. Okay, so here's the sort of classic example of sum of sine waves. When you push a button on a touch-tone telephone, the sounds you get are not pure tones, right? You won't find them. There's no tuning fork, no matter, you know, that you can tuning a tuning fork or blowing in any hole, single hole through instrument that produces pure tones will give them to you. All of these buttons give you tones that are the sum of two pure tones, actually the sum of two sine waves. And the way this thing was engineered is that the left-hand column, when you push it down, any button, gives you a one of three tones, 1209 hertz, 1336 hertz, or 1477 hertz. And in the rows, you get another set of one of four tones, 697, 770, 852, or 941. And when you push a button, you get the two tones overlapping simultaneously. You get, let's say, if you push down a button in this row, you'd get that sine curve. You push a button in this column, you get that more higher frequency sine curve. And when you add them together, this is the actual tone that you're hearing. Okay, which it sounds a little dissonant, right? Because it's not a pure tone. And every one of these is different. Each one of the 12 buttons gives you a different tonal combination. You know, they engineered it this way because it was easy and cheap to do at the time. These were really done basically before the electronic era, and engineers could easily figure out how to generate these seven tones and have the buttons produce tones in all these combinations. And what happens at the telephone switching station is that it listens. That is to say, it gets this curve, and it's able to take this apart and figure out that it's the sum of those two, and thereby identify which of the 12 buttons you actually push.